Number 12A.
We come to the next block, to the second part, where we have, from the point of view of truth, the underlined epitome, where it was said that it presents the manifestation of the Christ idea in the human. You know where I am? Earth.
Yeah.
So this is a statement, and we can ask ourselves now, what does that statement imply? So that we have a more detailed, diversified, and individualized sense of that translation, the manifestation of the word, of the Christ idea in the human. So we can ask ourselves, what happens in order that the Christ does translate itself to the human? And so the non-underlined epitomes that we have then on top of that are four different angles. So we can see again one of that statement has again a fourfold activity, and we must know what they are so that we can say, well, if I know the way, then I can go the way. So in the first place, we see that it is shown that we have to go from the Word to the Christ. That's the very first step, that we cannot hold back to the Word and say, well, I have established the Word, and the Word establishes really the nature of God and the nature of the Christ idea. I can't leave it at that. I must see that there is a dynamic in it, that there is something operating in it. We find the mechanics, so to say, of that translation, of that calculus. And so he gives us the steps so that we know which step we have to take. And the very first step is that he shows through four different symbols and incidences that we have first to make the step from the Word to the Christ, that we are not holding with the Word, but that we must see that there is something more to be done, and that we must go from the Word to the Christ, to wed the Word to the Christ. And only by wedding the Word to the Christ, the Word becomes alive. Therefore, if we are just leaning on the Word and stay put with the Word, that's a great danger. And every student of the system really has made that experience, that he was perhaps studying very earnestly and very diligently the seven synonymous terms, until he found out that he had a lot of ideas characterizing mind and a whole list of ideas characterizing spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love. And then he made a full stop and said, now I have done the job. Now I know what God is. And so by knowing God, what God is, that is the climax of understanding, the climax of knowing, now I know. And then he is quite surprised that it doesn't work for him. And John shows now very clearly, well, you only have stayed with the Word. You have never really made a step out of the Word into the Christ. Well, that's an easy saying, that you have to wed the Word with the Christ. That's a statement. It's a true statement, but it hasn't yet explained how we do it. So how we do it, I will not teach now. I will teach it later, namely then when we go again through all the non-underlined epitomes and see that they usually have four boxes on top of them, and that those four boxes are again explaining in more detail which step have to be taken in order to be able to wed the Word with the Christ. But we don't do that because we would then leave the level of first going through the main non-underlined epitome so as first to get the rhythm of it. So it is quite enough for the moment that we say, well, if we want to know something more about the manifestation of the Christ idea in the human, the very first thing I have to be aware of is that I must make that step from the Word to the Christ. Very few students make that step. Very few. Not because they don't want to do it, because they are unaware of it, because they feel, if I know the definition of God, what more can I know? There is nothing in addition or more than the definition of God. Naturally there is, because the definition of God is only one side of the holy city and doesn't include the other side of the holy city. So there is something more than to know the word of God. It's interesting that when you read John Dorley's explanation of the Gospel of John, he makes quite a point out of this, that he says it is very dangerous not to go from the Word to the Christ. It's very dangerous to stay with the Word. He says, then you fall on your nose, so to say. You can't go further. You come to a stop and nothing will unfold further. So he really appeals to the reader, at that time at Oxford, to the student, to really be aware that we are not satisfied with knowing the Word, but that we must find out how to wed the Word with the Christ. Then we go to the next one from the point of view of the Christ, that Christ's translation to the human must take place. So wedding our sense of the Word with the Christ is the first step. The second step then for is that when within us the Word has been wedded to the Christ, and the Christ is something very dynamic, that's the nature of the Christ, that it is a modus operandi, then that Christ begins to translate itself to the human. And so we find there really the two translations already shown there, that the translation must take place, or actually that then the translation does take place from the human to the divine. It shows that in four different symbols or incidences. But for us at the moment, it is enough just to stay with that epitome and see. I can't start really with the Christ translation. The Christ translation as given, for instance, in the textbook with the two translations of the translation of immortal mind and translation of mortal mind. I cannot start there really, except if I have first done the first step that is given here in the Word, namely to go from the Word to the Christ. And that implies, we will see later on when we take those little boxes which are not epitomized, because if I would have epitomized what is in the little four boxes every time, I would have had to use a diagram that is that big as that, and that is not really practical. But from the epitomes you have, you then can easily put your sense of it into these boxes. So we go on and see, all right, the first step that I have to do is really to feel out how I can wed the Word to the Christ, so that the Word becomes really operative. If it becomes operative, then it is the Christ translating itself. And we have those incidences in Jesus' life where he shows really then the translation taking place step by step in a wonderful way. If we see that the Christ does translate itself to the human, in order to do what in the human? It always does what in the human? It brings the manifestation of the idea. Therefore, the Christ comes to the human, taking away from the human consciousness that which is erroneous, and establishing in the human the idea of God, so that the human consciousness is step by step exchanged, so that it takes on a divine consciousness. If it takes on the divine consciousness, what is then the result of it? And the moment I ask for the result, I come to the focal point of Christianity, which shows, well, then man coincides with God. Then there is nothing left in man that is not in the nature, not according to the nature of God. Therefore, man coincides with God. That's Christianity. That sense that we have here, the coincidence of God and man, and shows how, what that coincidence implies, again through four different subtones. And only then, when he has shown that man coincides with God, he goes to the fourth side, where he brings in those four witnesses, which today we would call perhaps the four proofs of that coincidence of God and man. When we say the coincidence of God and man, I must be a bit more precise, because if I only say that God coincides with man, I may still have a concept of man as a corporeal man, that God coincides with a corporeal man. But naturally, Mrs. Eddy speaks about the Christ so that it shows that the Christ illustrates the coincidence of God and man in his image and likeness. So under man, we can only understand God's image and likeness, and naturally never the mortal. But our mortal sense would like that God would coincide with us as a mortal, because then we would feel we could have a jolly good life in the mortal, because God would always be there and always give us a jolly good time and see that nothing happens to us, that no sin, sickness, no death can enter in, no disharmony can enter in. Now, that naturally would be a wrong sense. So under that Christianity there, we see it's only the coincidence of God and man in God's image and likeness is established. So that what God does, man does too. What God works, man works too. That is then shown there. If we have then established that, then we really can say, then I have the proof, so to say, the witness that the Christ has been operating to its climax, to its utmost, so that that we feel the proof is brought forth, that the work that the Christ has been at work in every detail. So he gives there sense of the fourfold witness, that is, in his language, we today would perhaps say, he gives a fourfold proof that the Christ has really come and has fulfilled its purpose. Again, I go through these four subtones. I go through it again and again, always, because of what? Not because I may feel I have not explained it properly, but because I feel I can give in this way the method how each one can work by himself at home as a very efficient method that really brings the letter to the spirit, that the spiritual sense of the letter is being cultured thereby. Therefore, it's always that fourfold operation that is shown here. See, we have in theology we have to do with the Trinity of God. In Christian Science we don't have to do with the Trinity of God. We have to do with the quaternity of God. Everything is in the four. The city four square has never been realized as what it is by theology. So they stayed with the three. But as you see alone from the diagram here, it has all to do with the quaternity of being. not with the trinity of being. That because the fourth has never really been recognized in religion and theology, they have never recognized that science or that God can be understood through science, because the fourth is science that has never been accepted by theology. Only when Mrs. Eddy came, she accepted the fourth side. That was her contribution, and therefore she was presenting the textbook in the 4x4, because she was constantly thinking, like John was thinking, in the quaternity, in the calculus of God. Do you know what I mean with quaternity? Quattro, four, yes. So let's again just think over again those four steps, where we see we cannot just say that the Christ translates itself to the human. It is a fact, but it is not a scientific fact until we see more about it, until we see the explanation in it. Therefore, the explanation in it must unfold that epitome in its fundamental aspect, so that we know a bit more about that translation. So that when we go further, then tomorrow, wherever it is, we will even go further than those four and get the four into the four. But I would really feel that we get the hold of the subject much better if we don't take too many steps at once, that we stay with one level or with one level and just culture that. So here we have that there is a manifestation of the Christ that comes to the human. We are reminded suddenly of many definitions in the textbook where she says, well, the Christ is that which translates itself to the human. She gives even those two big translations of the translation of immortal mind and mortal mind, so that we are aware that such a translation takes place. How does it take place? Now we come to the four not underlined epitomes. How does it take place? That we see, I must be aware that I go further than the word, that I can't stay with the word, that is a danger to stay with the word. It impels us to wed it to the Christ. That's the very first step. When I wed it to the Christ, then actually the Christ is within me, and so I can really feel that the Christ does translate itself to me, that it is a divine message from God to me, that God is really concerned about me, that really God is concerned about every situation in the world. It comes to every point in the world. It translates itself from the generality to the specific. That's the Christ translation. To translate the general to the specific. Just think about the translation of immortal mind in the textbook, you know that by heart, where it in the first translation of immortal mind, she goes out from God, from the general, with the seven synonymous terms, translates it to the specific, namely to man as individual man. Never forget that. I may repeat it again later on. I'm very hot on repeating because that fills the time, you see. Because when she depicts then man, she depicts man as individual, not as generic the generic man, not as a compound idea man. It is individual. So many writers on the translation miss that point and talk about man as a compound idea, as a generic term man. This is not true. It is all wrong. It's a complete misunderstanding of what the translation implies. Falsifies really the idea of translation if one takes a man as a compound idea man. It is individual. Therefore, individuality is infinite. So the general, like the term of God is translated to the specific, to the individual. That's the office of the Christ. So we begin to see that the Christ translates itself to each individual situation, to the point of idea in that translation as the image in mind. That's what mind knows about a situation. If we have that sense within us, that we are relieved and see, gosh, that's really what the Christ is doing and is always doing, no matter if I resist it or don't resist it, no matter if I understand it or don't understand it, it does it just the same. It comes to the human and wants to establish always the right idea of every situation. If I resist it, I go through a crisis, and that crisis may be very long until I bend my knees and say, oh God, now I see it, and accept the Christ translation, and then the idea, which is specifically true to the situation, can manifest itself. If I have that consciousness and say, this is what the Christ is doing all the time, and I feel the saving power and the saving office in it, because it comes to the human to oust out of the human all that which does not belong to the divine, I feel that I therefore, as the effect of it, I come to Christianity, that as an effect of it, I come more and more into coincidence with God. I more and more then reflect God. And so you have the coincidence of God and man in God's image and likeness. And that again verifies Mrs. Eddy's textbook, because she too speaks in various language about that coincidence of God and man, especially there where in the platform she talks in the Christ sections. So the Christ section is full of these statements, or she speaks there in that Christ section in the platform about the spiritual agreement between God and man. That's just another term than the coincidence of God and man in his image and likeness. So that I see that Christ is going to fulfill its mission. Clearly, that mission to bring man back to the origin, back to God, back to principle. And then, if I see that, then I feel I get the proof, or I'm a witness of that Christ translation. And that's the fourth side which John gives, and gives us four witness that really the Christ has come, that really Jesus is the Christ, that really the Christ has been sent from God, and that he is manifesting God in its fullness. Yes. So we hear the rhythm of that, just of that one sentence, which we had as an underlined statement, that the Christ is manifesting itself to the human. This is from the point of view of truth, and all these, what I have been showing, have the touch of truth in it, because they all showed really the power of truth to manifest itself in spite of everything else. That's truth. Love hasn't in spite of. Love is just one love, and it includes everything and does not know anything against love. So truth here, it has that accent that it says, I translate myself in spite of every opposition. That's my job, to translate it to the human, and the human has to give way and give way and give way, if no matter if it wants to give way or not want to give way, but I bring every situation right back to God, and that's a proof of my very being. What about, if we go further and look at that very Christ consciousness from the point of view of love, there we have as a general main epitome underlined, I try to express it as universal acceptance of the divine calculus of spirit. Once truth has tried to put everything out of the way that hindered the translation of the Christ to the human. Once that truth has really done away with opposition, then there is only one big acceptance of that Christ translation. And so there we get a great sense, really, of that universality of the Christ working and accepting that Christ working. Again, this is a statement, and we ask ourselves, what is the explanation of it? How does it work? What are the various aspects of this statement? And we get those four sub-epitomes that explain, really, the modus operandi. First of all, the word would have to say, well, that calculus is the only calculus, therefore it's a universal calculus, and therefore that calculus is not the material calculus, that is the spiritual calculus that takes the place of the material calculus and is operating as a spiritual calculus. It's a terrific sense there. If I just summarize it quickly, it really shows there what Mrs. Eddy calls in the textbook the calculus of spirit, which means it's the fact about the material calculus, and we know that material calculus in the world is what? Is calculating with matter, is calculating with forces, is calculating with a time-space universe. That is the frame within which the material calculus works and has been working since Newton. Anyway, one was aware of it. Jesus comes along and says, I do away with that material calculus. I don't see that substance is matter, therefore he could multiply the food. I do away with that sense that the universe is three-dimensional, namely that it has three dimensions, that it has space. I do away. He did not accept space. He went right over the sea in one moment. He didn't accept space. He didn't away with time. He said at once he was on the other side. So he did away with that. He walked on the sea. What does mean that? He did away with gravitation, with the material forces. Said the forces are the forces of mind. Therefore I can walk. Therefore, I tread on forces, as Mrs. Eddy says. So he gives a terrific big sense of the calculus of spirit against the calculus of matter.